these people want us all on a central bank digital currency.
We don't need more digital currency. We already have digital currency. It's called the US dollar, it's called the euro, it's called the yen. They're all digital right now.
Hey friends, Sean from SGT Report here. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's wonderful to have you all back. So get this, on 6/6/23, that's the date, June 6th, 23, 6/6, and 2 times 3 is 6, on 6/6/6, really shocking news, and that soundbite was from the SEC snake, former Goldman Sachs Gary Gensler, who did nothing when he was at the CFTC to rein in the criminal manipulation of paper metals. Well, now he's attacking not only crypto and Bitcoin, but Coinbase and Binance. Friends, Lior Gantz, the founder of Wealth Research Group, joins me to discuss 5 or 6 big news items. We're going to break those down for you, and then we're going to talk about the U.S. debt ceiling and precious metals in detail. Thanks so much for tuning in, friends. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. Rein in wealth like King Charles with a gold IRA from Noble Gold Investments. A gold IRA can fortify your own financial kingdom. Imagine the confidence that comes from a retirement backed by a tangible, proven asset. Gold, an asset that's not at the mercy of unpredictable market swings. Gold, silver, platinum, or palladium, the realm is yours to command. Fend off concerns about economic downturns and let your wealth thrive with the timeless security of precious metals. Now, past performance is no guarantee of future results, and always perform your own due diligence before making any investment decision. But this month, the first solid 1/4 ounce gold standard bullion coin ever issued with King Charles' image on it can be yours with your own qualifying gold IRA or 401k rollover of $50,000 or higher. You can't go wrong with Noble Gold Investments. Call Noble Gold Investments at 877-646-5347 to get started, or visit noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com. Hey friends, welcome back. Thank you so very, very much for being here, and thank you so much for clicking play today. Guys, we have so much news today, it blows my mind. Big news everywhere we look, as Lior Gantz, the founder of Wealth Research Group, joins me to discuss so much of it. Lior, welcome back. How are you, brother?
I'm good. Thank you for having me back.
Glad to have you back. I'm going to start with a screen share here. We're going to do a news roundup because, like I said, the news is coming fast and furiously everywhere we look. And of course, as predicted, the U.S. government, is this the last card, guys, that Wernher von Braun warned us about? I'll play a soundbite about that in just 1 second. Military whistleblower claims the United States has UFO retrieval program. National Geospatial Intel Agency and National Reconnaissance Office veteran and now whistleblower David Charles Grush says the U.S. government has alien craft in its possession and has been reverse engineering them. Guys, let me play this soundbite from Redacted, and then I'm going to give you my views on this big story.
Grush said that the recoveries of partial fragments through and up to intact vehicles have been made for decades, he says, through the present day by the government, its allies, and defense contractors.
And defense contractors. Lior, I'll come back to you in just 1 second, but let me play this soundbite from Carol Rosen. As my audience knows, Wernher von Braun, the father of modern-day rocketry, the man behind the Apollo missions and those rockets said to have taken men to the moon in 1968, 69, 70, 71, well, Wernher von Braun famously said repeatedly, the last card is the alien card, and it will all be a lie. Here's Carol Rosen, his assistant, for 4 years.
And over and over and over, during the 4 years that I knew him and was giving his speeches for him, he would bring up that last card. And remember, Carol, the last card is the alien card. We're going to have to build space-based weapons against aliens. And all of it, he said, is a lie.
And all of it, he said, is a lie. Lior, I have so much more news to share. We're going to hear from Noor bin Laden and her speech outside the UN headquarters in Switzerland next. But your thoughts on any of that? Isn't it interesting to watch the mainstream Mockingbird media in lockstep parrot this information about UFOs and the whistleblower? And I didn't see one mainstream media article call the guy a quack or a conspiracy theorist or try to put a turd in the punch bowl whatsoever. The mainstream media is in lockstep on this one. The U.S. government has alien craft. What do you think?
From all the research I've done on this, We have no real cut-proof evidence of UFOs. What there's a lot of are sightings of aerial phenomena that civilians don't get to see. And I'm sure anyone that has studied either DARPA or other military programs knows that they're probably 30 to 40 years ahead of anything that is rolled out commercially. So I to my understanding, anything that is construed as UFO reverse engineering is probably debatable. I have spent hundreds of hours on this topic. It's a topic that I've been fascinated with since I was a child. So I can tell you for the better part of 28 years, I've been studying all of this, and I've seen so much. And from everything that I've seen in terms of real in-depth information, I still contend that these are really advanced military industrial complex innovations that we just have no knowledge of.
Yeah.
And to my understanding, neither does a sitting president. This goes beyond their clearance.
Yeah, beyond top secret. I'm glad to hear you say that, because the more I've studied this, the more I tend to agree with you. And now we know that Project Bluebeam is an actual operation that could be used to try to hoodwink the world into believing that there's an alien invasion. And I think it all ties into what Wernher von Braun said famously, repeatedly, the last card is the alien card, and it will all be a lie. Now, I think this is actually related because I think the New World Order, which Noor bin Laden speaks of specifically here in this soundbite in front of the UN headquarters in Switzerland regarding the World Health Organization total takeover, is spot on. These people do want a one world government, and they are going to use the next plandemic in order to get that New World Order one world government. Here's Noor bin Laden.
For those of us gathered here today, it is clear that we are at an inflection point in history, which will drastically determine the course of mankind. After decades of scheming, the globalists are on the brink of realizing their goal, the establishment of what they have coined the New World Order, more commonly known today as the Great Reset after the COVID pandemic. It is the globalists' vision for a one-world government. Their objective, the centralization of power under one top ruling caste, and with that, the eradication of our sovereignty, both at national and individual levels.
I think she's absolutely spot on. In just a couple of more news items, guys, and then we're going to get to incredible news, in my view, from the SEC. That I think plays in directly to what Noor bin Laden just said there. No more individual freedom for you, dear slave, especially financial freedom. And I know that my guest Lior will have a lot to say about that. All right, another news item here, guys. Presidential candidate and enemy of the New World Order, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., claims that Pfizer funneled $12 million to CNN anchor Anderson Cooper as part of a deal to promote mRNA COVID jabs to the American people. Friends, that's on top of Cooper's $12 million per year CNN salary. I tweeted about this, and I did share my soundbite with Len Horowitz about the Biltmore Mansion pool. And of course, we know Anderson Cooper is a Vanderbilt heir. So what Horowitz shared, guys, in that sound clip regarding Podesta art and the little boy hanging on that tiled wall there, I think is one for the ages. You can go to my Twitter account to play that soundbite. All right, next news item. The Kakhovka Dam in Ukraine has been blown up. Well, here's Zero Hedge saying, as WaPo reported, the Ukrainians even conducted a test strike with a HIMARS launcher on one of the floodgates at the Nova Kakhovka Dam. Now, that's Kiev's long-term last resort, their plan to blow up that dam exposed. And of course, friends, and it's very sad to say, they will continue to ratchet up the heat in this proxy war against Russia via Ukraine and Lindsey Graham and the rhinos and the Democrats, and everybody's in on this. And yes, the debt ceiling deal has been passed. It's been reached. So plenty of money for Ukraine and endless wars, but no money for we the people. And Lior, I wanted to move on to this news item. It is right up your alley. Coinbase crashes after SEC sues the crypto exchange. Now recall that soundbite we just heard from Noor bin Laden. No more individual freedom. That's the goal of the World Health Organization. And Lior, it would seem to me that that is the goal of Goldman Sachs scum and head of the SEC, Gary Gensler, who is now using the SEC to sue Coinbase, alleging the crypto firm broke U.S. securities rules. Even though, Lior, the CEO of Coinbase has been begging for regulatory clarity from the SEC. They have contacted the SEC more than 30 times begging for regulatory clarity, and the SEC refuses to give them any. And now the SEC is suing Coinbase. And this comes just one day after the news that the SEC is suing Binance. This is a war against crypto. And frankly, it's a war against Bitcoin, Lior. And in my view, it's because these people want us all on a central bank digital currency.
We don't need more digital currency. We already have digital currency. It's called the US dollar. It's called the euro. It's called the yen. They're all digital right now. We already have digital investments. And you have digital, you have entrepreneurs representing digital investments on this program all day long. And it's whether it's the big tech companies, the automobile companies, you name it. It's all digital right now, the investing world. So what is the real underlying value of these tokens? And that's why you need full, fair, and truthful disclosure.
So regarding one more government and using any global crisis to usher that in, that did not work, or that epically failed during a real event. So I think that the world we're seeing right now is getting deglobalized at the fastest rate since the 1870s. Mm-hmm. We are really experiencing tremendous deglobalization. If you understand the cycles of globalization and deglobalization, we had a tremendous globalization event starting in after the independence war. So in the 1870s until the early 1900s, we had tremendous strides in globalization. You saw the formation, you saw the invention of cars, Edison bringing electricity to the masses, the Wright brothers with their invention of the airplane, and many more. And then you had a tremendous deglobalization. That deglobalization started with 1908, with the banking crisis in the United States, which led inadvertently to the formation of the Fed in 1913. By the following year, so the sixth year of deglobalization, we started with the First World War. That led into the end of the gold standard in the early 20s, then the Roaring 20s with the Great Depression, the rise of dictatorships in Europe, and then World War II. So in the last deglobalization period between 1908 and 1945, that was the worst period in world history. So my point is not that globalization is amazing and deglobalization is the worst, but it's to say that when you deglobalize, you reset so many of the relationships, geopolitical and economic, in the world, that there is, as with any big change, there is the threat of regional powers rising up. So between 1945 and, I would say, up until 2011, we had globalization and even hyper-globalization after the Soviet Union fell. Because after the Soviet Union fell, there was no reason for globalization to persist. the formation of the Bretton Woods agreements in 1945, and later on, after the U.S. defaulted on the dollar standard, on the gold standard, and went de facto petrodollar, the whole reason for it was to defeat the Soviet Union and become the only empire. Once that was done, there needed to be a new thinking in the world. But because of the military-industrial complex and other influential think groups in the United States, they just continue to extrapolate on that same strategy. And that hyper-globalization period brought us wars, which many Americans have said, hey, we don't understand what we're doing here. What are we fighting for, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right.
So by the time 2011 rolls by and fracking makes shale oil abundant in the United States, and you're not dependent on Saudi Arabia anymore as a country, and at the same time, you understand that because of the 20-year mistake you've done with furthering globalization into hyper-globalization, you created your new enemy. You created China. China was not a rich country in 1991.
Sure. Can I just say something? You sparked a thought here, and I think you might be spot on. Up until, say, let's say it's 2011, there was a period, a multi-decades-long period of unparalleled U.S. hegemony. And Correct. Now we're seeing that change as nation Correct. States move away from the dollar. And you said something also very interesting about fracking, about the U.S. being energy independent under Correct. Donald J. Trump. And the first thing the New World Order puppet Joe Biden did is dismantle the Keystone XL pipeline. The second thing he did was end key federal leases for oil and gas exploration on federal land. So Correct. You're right. This is very interesting. The deglobalization that's happening, that I think you're describing, is the end of that unparalleled U.S. hegemony. And so now we see this administration and Gary Gensler and Biden and the Ukraine situation and the war against Russia. They're like a caged rat. They're like a caged animal, it seems like to me, Lior. The United States is acting like a cornered, rabid dog. That's what I feel like is happening right now, because I don't recognize this government. This is not a government by and for we the people. It seems like it's all been weaponized, Lior.
Yeah, I think what's happening, to go back to this chronological event, when Obama in 2011 realized that American interests have changed from the Middle East to the South China Sea, he started to pull troops from Afghanistan, obviously a long process. And we have to realize that China's strategy is to make sure that America still has trouble in the Middle East so that they can't solely focus on the South China Sea. The way that China does it, along with Russia, is by helping countries that they believe will do the most damage for America and the Middle East, and will keep them there. America is in the Middle East to protect its allies and to protect oil flow around the world, going from Saudi Arabia to all of the Western allies. That is essentially the petrodollar system. We, meaning we, Washington, have the biggest fleet, the biggest navy. We will protect your oil. We will protect you from your enemies, meaning Saudi Arabia. And in turn, you will sell us cheap, reliable oil to us and to all of our allies. This is the petrodollar system. In 2011, that system no longer became the one-all be-all for the United States with fracking and with the rise of independent natural gas reserves, etc. Fast forward to Donald Trump. In 2018, he makes a very clear speech at the UN and says this trend that started with Obama slowly is going to continue. We are pulling out of the Middle East. We have one sole focus, that is China. That's why you put tariffs on China. You create the framework so that you can see what can happen. Can we get along? Is it going somewhere else? But you start somewhere, and he started with tariffs. He also stated in that UN speech that every country that is a part of the Western alliances has to contribute to NATO or to any other alliance, the 2% of GDP, just like the United States does. And obviously, he complained that other countries don't do what they need to in terms of their military. That was a big pivotal message that the United States is deglobalizing. What happened with the pandemic is that you had this perfect global crisis, perfect quote unquote, in terms of this was the moment for the UN, for the World Bank, for the World Health Organization, for all the world, or for all the globalist organizations to say, hey, it's time for us to all band and come together, just like you state with the threat of an external alien or whatever.
Sure.
And we should all come together and solve this. And
yes, in the name of COVID, in the name of the plandemic.
Correct.
Okay, yep,
correct.
You're spot
and
on.
It failed epically.
Yeah.
You saw Sweden doing one thing. You saw New Zealand doing one thing. Within the United States, I had a friend who did a road trip in 2020 across America. And he said it was unbelievable. It was like a tale of six different countries. In New York, without a mask, it's almost like you were out of your mind. Going into Nebraska in the middle of the country, they didn't even hand out masks. Everything was open.
Mm-hmm.
And then going to the West Coast, it was, again, everyone's mirroring. He told me this was amazing to see. And so what that exposed is that there are so many various different opinions and so many cultures and so many nuances that the world is not going global anymore. It's going deglobal. And Russia's invasion of Ukraine is a clear case study of a regional power moving to expand its reach.
And drawing that a line in the sand, though, right? Drawing a line in the sand to the NATO expansion, which has been going on since NATO was founded. And Putin's had quite enough. And here, I think you're spot on. The other thing I just want to say real quickly is the gift the founders gave us is 50 nation states. There isn't just one United States of America. No, the federal government derives its power from the consent of the governed and those 50 states. And we can see now the red states really moving away quickly and nullifying all of the tyranny coming from Washington, D.C. and the corporate government. So that is the gift the founders gave us. So your friend who went across the United States in 2020, he got to experience that gift. If you don't like what's going on in a tyrannical blue state, get yourself to a red state where your rights actually may be protected. And I think that is the war that might be coming. It's a war for citizens as citizens flee the tyranny of blue states to migrate to red states. Lior?
Yeah, I think that you see in the United States a clear case of culture division between red and blue. It's not just happening in the United States. It's happening across the world. It's happening where I'm right now in Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is would say, the equivalent of a blue state in the United States. And outside of Tel Aviv, there are very red state cities.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've been watching the news, but we have here in this country right now big riots every Saturday. And this government may fall even, and it's the same as with within the United States and everywhere else. And again, within Israel, there's also people that are that take the side of yes, Russia had the right to invade Ukraine in order to protect from NATO invasion, and the other side says no, Putin is out of his mind, et cetera, et cetera. It's everywhere. It's not just in the United States. It's everywhere right now. And that's part of deglobalization. That's part of questioning everything, questioning the system that that was in place thus far and is no longer in place. Trump's Abraham Accords here in the Middle East, their entire strategy, their entire purpose is to give Middle Eastern countries an exit for the day after the U.S. continues to pull out and new regional powers come in. You can also see failures. You can see American failures in the Middle East. Americans have, you know, the reason that central banks have bought gold in 2022 at a record high amount, an all-time high of gold purchases by central banks around the world, is because of failed sanctions by the United States on countries that they deem as, you know, whatever they've done wrong in their minds. And those sanctions have failed. You can see it in Syria, for example, where they've put sanctions beyond any scope of the imagination against Bashar Assad, but he remained in power, and he continues to remain in power. And now it's consensus that he will stay in power. So those have failed. Sanctions against Iran have failed. The country is on the verge of achieving nuclear capability. And if they choose to, they can take that enriched uranium and create a nuclear arsenal. Nobody's going to stop them from here on. And that is leverage for them going forward. Go ahead. I just want to finish with saying that we just had elections in Turkey. Erdogan is one.
Yes. Yeah.
And Erdogan, his entire platform is that I don't take IMF loans. I don't take World Bank loans. Mm-hmm. I don't concede to Biden. Therefore, vote for me.
Yep. The New World Order tried to rig that election and it didn't work. It was a big defeat for the globalists that Erdogan got reelected.
Yeah. And Turkey is a country that is a natural candidate to be a regional leader here in the Middle East. Their size, their topography, their demography. Demographics and obviously their size. They are going to, the Middle East is moving into an era of tranquility. You had the Arab Spring in 2011 that led to the worst war of the past decade, the war in Yemen. You had ISIS, etc. All of these things are unwinding. And you see that what's happening, which is a very interesting dynamic, is that Saudi Arabia, who wants to be the author of this new page in the Middle East, with MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, who wants to be the leader of the Arab world, he's looking and seeing that behind his back, there is no American flag anymore. And if you know Saudi Arabia, you know it's a country that has a good military, but since they found oil, there's always been a Western country back it. First it was the British, then the Americans. And now they see that the Americans don't do anything when Iran attacks Saudi Arabia or its factories or its ships, etc. So it sees that it needs a new protector. And in recent months, China has not only brokered normalization deals between Iran and Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia has started selling oil to select agencies in China, in yuan, settling in yuan, which is a clear betrayal of petrodollar. And as we continue to see this, we see that America's relevance in the Middle East is waning. And that is a clear sign to you, as an American, that the strategies and the policies and the thinking that we can come in and shape democracy like it's the 53rd state, or, you know, like it's another state,
right,
in the union, has failed. It's failed everywhere. It's failed in Iraq. It's failed here. I don't want to start naming them, but it doesn't work. And China is coming in and trying to fill that vacuum. Obviously, Russia has been instrumental both in Turkey and in Syria, and they're buying weapons from Iran right now. So they're obviously investing a lot in that partnership, in that relationship. And we know that they have a very strong relationship with the Chinese. I think that what you're seeing here is deglobalization, which means to me that in the next few years, you will continue to see this dynamic of a weakening dollar, because, as you said, the United States has enough within to continue to grow. It really doesn't need to continue its role as the policeman of the world in order to prosper.
Hey friends, thanks so much for being here. Just a quick break and a word about our sponsor. Just as King Charles in Britain has a crown with a timeless wealth of gold, you can enrich your future with the enduring value of a gold IRA from Noble Gold Investments. Like those precious crowns, a gold IRA doesn't tarnish over time. It shines bright, even in economic turmoil. It's a hedge against inflation and stability in volatile markets. This month, the first quarter-ounce gold standard bullion coin ever issued with King Charles image on it can be yours with your own qualifying gold IRA or 401k rollover of $50,000 or higher. As always, do your own due diligence before making any investment decision. But you can't go wrong with Noble Gold Investments. Hurry and go to noblegoldinvestments.com to secure your wealth. I'm loving your analysis, by the way. I think you're spot on here, and you said something really important. The blue states, right?
Yeah.
Tel Aviv is acting like a blue state. So we still see some of that despotic behavior throughout the world. And the point I want to make is that the despot sitting in the Oval Office in Washington, D.C., the corporate government despot, Joe Biden, he and his administration, case in point, Gary Gensler, the SEC, case in point, the feds refused to release thousands of hours of Jan 6 footage, which would exonerate those falsely accused of an insurrection. We see this government behaving despotically to its own people in the United States. And we see the same thing from blue states. Let me show you this. Absolutely infuriating. College tuition is now free for illegal immigrants in Minnesota, while middle-class students who were born in the U.S. or came here legally have to pay their own tuition. Illegal aliens, Lior, in Minnesota, get free tuition. So the blue state behavior is absolutely despotic. It's absolutely the antithesis of our constitutional form of republic government. And that brings us to the debt ceiling deal. I want to play this soundbite from Stu Peters on Kevin McCarthy and the Rhinos, this debt deal failure. It's an absolute betrayal of the American people. And Stu Peters is often fired up, and he certainly is very fired up in this sound clip.
This is what we warned would happen at the start of this year, and now it's come to pass. 70 out of 222 Republicans voted against this mess. Notably, Marjorie Taylor Greene wasn't one of them. That wasn't enough to stop it. It's passed now. This is what we get for 2 years of a Republican Congress. In functional organizations, you have accountability for failure. In functional countries, you have accountability for people who betray their people and betray their country. When are we going to have some accountability here?
I'll pause it there, guys. I got to tell you, Stu does a good job. And sometimes being angry is a good way to communicate the information, because if you don't have some righteous indignation at this point, well, maybe your blood isn't boiling because it's been coagulated by the bioweapon masquerading as a vaccine. Only 70 of 220 Republicans voted against this debt ceiling debacle. Now, Lior, let me ask you. You mentioned the central banks. They're stacking gold. They're hoarding gold. Okay, so are some of the nation states. China, one of the world's premier producers of gold, they're not selling any gold. They're importing even more gold. So this debt ceiling deal, I believe, is a total betrayal of we the people, because it's giving the demon rats, the Democrats, everything they need for the next 2 years to continue with their tyranny and their tyrannical plans. I mean, shouldn't we have stopped this flow of money? But then the government would have failed. Guess what? Everybody on planet Earth at this point would like the despotic DC corporate government to fail. What are your thoughts on the debt ceiling deal, Lior?
Yeah, I have a different opinion. The problem that America has is that it continues just to run deficits in perpetuity and has to figure out what gives. Because if you look at the government, if you become president tomorrow and you look at the big expenses of the federal government, it is Medicare, Medicaid, it is Social Security. So those three alone address the social needs of a quarter of the country, 80 million people. If you think that it's in any way, shape or form possible to do something to those entitlements at this point, look at what happened in France when they raised the pension from 62 to 64. The people revolted in a way that is almost revolutionary. If the United States understands that its days as a reserve currency and its way to finance the debt in an era that will remain high interest rates, because we are in an era right now that zero interest rates will not come back. I don't know if, you know, ever is a long time, but certainly in the next 25 years, we will not see zero interest rates anywhere in the world. We are either going to see high interest rates or normal interest rates, but certainly we're not going back to the era of zero interest rates. And in that world, interest payments do have a real cost to them. The government knows this, and it's paying higher interest rates. So I think, first of all, the 2024 elections, the fiscal responsibility will be an important campaign promise. When you had hyper-globalization between 1992 and let's call it today, because the Soviet Union was selling commodities at liquidation costs, and because the world was moving in a way that cheap labor was always getting found. If there was cheap labor anywhere, entrepreneurs would go there almost, without respect to borders, and you would always get a flow of people, money, ideas, etc., without nations saying no to each other. Everything was open. And we're seeing the end of that. And that means things will cost more. Things will not be as reliable as before. You would have shortages of some products, of some services. You would have delays. It's not going to be as seamless as before. And in that world, we have to realize that people understand now what inflation is. People are feeling inflation.
All over the world. I just saw an inflation chart the other day. All over the world. I think inflation, even in Switzerland, is like running at 10%. And
all over the world.
Let me just make sure I understand you correctly. Here's the U.S. national debt clock today in real time.
Scroll a bit down.
Yeah. The unfunded liabilities, we're talking about $200 trillion. Is that why you said that you sort of disagree with Stu Peter's sentiment on the U.S. debt ceiling deal? Because a default would have been so catastrophic? Because sooner or later, it's coming. Sooner or later, it's coming. Either we get massive, massive hyperinflation of the dollar and the collapse comes that way, or eventually there will be a default, which will also be catastrophic. So is that kind of what you were driving at there with the U.S. debt ceiling deal? It kind of had to be done. It makes me wonder if that's why only 70 of 220 Republicans voted against the deal, because behind closed doors, they were probably all warned. Do you want the collapse to happen on your watch? Because if you don't approve this thing, the collapse will be unprecedented, total catastrophe for the United States. I wonder if they weren't fear-mongered into approving this thing.
If the U.S. defaults, if the U.S. defaults on its debt, it's I don't even know if you understand how insane that's the end, at the end of everything.
But is that why they pushed this thing through? Is that why they did it?
Of course, it's
okay.
It's,
but now we're in the realm of monopoly money, right? Look at that debt clock: 31 trillion, 32 trillion in debt. So now it's exponentially rising, and so we're going to hit monopoly money.
Yeah, just realize a couple of things. First of all, there are countries that are way worse. Okay. So that's one thing that's important to understand. Way, way worse. Most countries are way worse. The second thing is that, like I said, I think that the 2024 elections and elections going forward will deal with that problem. The problem is not the size of the debt. The problem is that literally it is unsustainable. And when you have an unsustainable problem, you have to fix it. So when you have muted inflation, like we had between at least the 1990s and and up until recently, people didn't feel inflation. The average person did not know inflation was an issue. Everybody knows inflation is an issue, not just in the United States, but around the world. And so that creates the incentive to bring real solutions to the table, because now there is a problem that everyone is aware of, and now making difficult decisions is feasible. In other words, for Emmanuel Macron, the French politician that
former Rothschild banker Emmanuel Macron, yep,
yeah, that went against the wishes of every person that's either approaching the retirement age or at the retirement age, or was under the impression that a government promise is set in stone, and raised the retirement age from 62 to 64. This is we have to understand that this is not like changing the entire rule book, because when Bismarck 150 years ago came up with the idea of retirement and pensions to win elections in Europe, in Germany, he did so by doing the reverse. What happened was people used to live until the age of 52 or 50 or 53, and that was a lifespan, and retirement or pensions started at 57. So it used to be the retirements waited for you after your expected life span would have already ended.
Right. Now people are living longer. Hey, you know what's interesting,
longer.
Though? Here's what I love about the French people. Not only do they march in the streets, they march in the streets for a very long time. And by the way, did you see those people storm the BlackRock headquarters? I think it was in Paris. So they know they have their eye on the right enemies of humanity, in my view, at this point, right? The New World Order, BlackRock, Rothschild. I mean, I think it's key to share that with folks. And I love your analysis today, and I'm not trying to rush you. I know we just have 10 minutes left, though. Let me ask you, if we're seeing inflation all over the world, and we are, how in the world, and by the way, Gary Gensler, when he was the head of the CFTC, again, I don't remember him suing JP Morgan or any of the criminal international banks for manipulating the prices of precious metals via the paper markets. Okay, but now he's going hard in the paint after crypto? After Bitcoin, after Coinbase, after Binance, give me a break. Now, explain to me how, if we're seeing inflation all over the world, and we know that eventually the U.S. will hit hyperinflation, at least I believe that, how do we explain gold at $1,978 an ounce and silver at $23.86 an ounce when those precious metals should be acting as the hedge against inflation that they are? They should be inflating in price because of all the money printing, but they're not. Again, is it just more manipulation that Gary Gensler refused to rein in when he headed the CFTC?
The dynamics, and let's start with gold for a second. And by the way, regarding central bank digital currencies, which I know you mentioned before, can I explain that for 1 minute?
Please, we're very anti-CBDC here because, look, okay. I'll tell you this. I think that Elizabeth Warren should be sent straight to Gitmo because she is building an anti-crypto army. Gary Gensler appears to be very much on board with it because these people want us on their central bank Fed coin, their central bank digital currency, okay, which is a slave coin in my view.
Okay, so if you want to really learn A to Z on what's going on in the world right now on central bank digital currencies, I urge you to go to Wealth Research Group. .com/CBDC and /CBDC2, the number two. It's a two-part series on exactly what's happening right now with CBDCs. And just to let the audience know the gist of it, there are two types of CBDCs. One CBDC is one that you would not even know about. It's a wholesale CBDC. It's a CBDC that central banks will transact with other central banks or with commercial banks. This will not reach the public. And the second one is the retail CBDC. So that would be a JP Morgan or a Bank of America or Wells Fargo or any of the other 4,000 banks in the United States. Yes, thank you. That is CBDC, and there's a companion to that, the CBDC too. And so That's the wholesale one, and then there's the retail one. In terms of what's happening around the world right now, we are in the early stages of pilots for wholesale CBDCs, and they have a gazillion problems. Okay, we are nowhere near rolling out any type of retail CBDC, and neither do the banks have any willingness to do so. So I know that this gets a lot of press, a lot of attention. CBDCs in a retail form, where you and I hold a CBDC, is nowhere near being implemented anywhere around the world on a retail level. To a much more advanced degree, there is the wholesale CBDC, which means basically a central bank will transact with another central bank, etc. Still, even that, which is more advanced, there are so many problems with it. The first one, you can imagine being a cyber threat. If anyone can hack that, he gets control over a country's currency supply. They worry about a gazillion problems. I think if you download those two manuals, you will see exactly what their fears are, what their engineers are trying to do in terms of engineers, software coders, and everywhere, and anything else that they're either outsourcing or doing themselves. They are nowhere near this. This is not an issue for tomorrow or the next day. And the biggest thing that I think is important is that no banking institution in the world considers a CBDC as a replacement for paper money or cash money. None of them want to have a world of strictly digital money. The risks are just too grave for themselves, for society, etc. It's not worth the risk. So I think that it's important that people know that, because there's so much information out there, and it's just important to see what we actually have in development. And you should not be worrying about this as something that's imminent at all. This is going to be years and years in the making. And once implemented, it may not even reach the public at first glance. So,
and plus, Lior, it requires our compliance. And more and more states are introducing legislation that recognize gold and silver as legal tender. We can see what's going on in El Salvador with Bitcoin, the same thing, embracing Bitcoin as legal tender, untaxable legal tender. And I think it's an idea whose time has come, because we the people, at least my listeners and those who are truly awake and aware of the New World Order, are not going to comply. We're not going to comply with any more World Health Organization mandates in the next plandemic, and we're not going to comply with a central bank digital currency. And I really do wonder, though, gold still not at an all-time high in USD. It came within about $5 or $6 a few weeks ago. But again, the bankers hammer it down. Silver at $24 an ounce. I mean, are you kidding me, Lior? These things should be, silver in particular, should be many multiples higher as it reflects the inflation and hyperinflation we're starting to see around the world. So I nothing can explain this better to me in my mind than the manipulation via the paper markets. And sooner or later, that's got to end. It's got to end. It can't go on forever, can it?
So when you think about gold, I want to share with you a few interesting observations, and then silver. Gold, what's very interesting about it is that nominally, as you say, it's very close to an all-time high. But if you look historically at how many ounces of gold it takes to buy one point of the S&P 500. The historical average sits at around 1.5 to 1. In other words, it used to be that 1.5 points of the S&P 500 would buy you 1 ounce of gold. With 1 point of the S&P trading just above $4,300 today, that would mean that the price of gold historically would have to be around $6,600 an ounce. We are now in a situation where it takes 2.5 ounces of gold to buy 1 point of the S&P 500. So the ratio has gone from the average of about 1.5 to 0.4. We are actually trading at a 120-year low on the gold to S&P 500 ratio. So I think that's really interesting because in around 80 different fiat currencies around the world, gold is trading right now at an all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
It's not trading at an all-time high in US dollar terms, but if you live in about 80 other countries, it's already at an all-time high or very near, including all the major economies. So I think that what's really important to understand with the dynamics of gold is that it tends to appreciate on the order of about 8 or 9% a year under in this 21st century, and about 7% a year between 1971 and today. And that's higher than the rate of inflation. So to me, owning gold in the fiat currency system has been a tremendous success story for anyone that's held throughout his life and saved in gold terms. He's done a miraculous job for his family and for his wealth, because he's been able to really preserve wealth. I think that where gold comes in to its next big rally is when we start to see the Fed pausing on rate hikes, because Powell is already telegraphed to the market that he does not wish to implement anything in the order of what Paul Volcker did to stop inflation. In other words, Paul Volcker did was unannounced, because there was no FOMC meetings back then. He raised rates by 100% overnight, from 10% to 20%. That, you know, imagine that today. It would be unfathomable. So the Fed is not doing that. And the Fed, what gold wants to hear, what gold investors and the investors that move the price of gold want to hear, is that the Fed has made its peace with hot inflation, and made its peace means that it pauses and just stays at these higher interest rates, way higher than normal, by the way, interest rates, until such time as inflation consistently continues to trend down. Now, I obviously no one trusts the CPI numbers, but even if you look at shadow numbers, inflation is coming down. And so I think that what gold needs in order to rally into all-time highs and above is to see the Fed pause. And because in the last 3 days here, the new consensus is that the Fed will skip a meeting, meaning that it will still raise rates, but in July, and just do nothing in June. It prolongs the start of a rally, because before then, when gold was above 2,000, it was because the consensus was that June would be the final rate hike or a confirmed pause, and it's just not. So gold is waiting for the Fed to concede and say, look, we've done enough. Inflation is a problem. It's a manageable problem at this point. It will take 5, 6, 7 years to bring it back down to our 2%, and we can live with that as a society. That's what's going to really help gold. That's also what's going to help silver. Because when they do that, when they concede, when they say inflation has won, it's sticky and it's won, that is the trigger for the dollar bear market, which will accelerate. So I think between now, mid-2023, and at least for the next 3, 4, 5 years, we will be in a regime of hotter than normal inflation and weaker dollar, so a dollar bear market. And in that context, I think that gold has a real chance of changing its zip code to the 3000s. And I wouldn't be surprised if we do see silver hitting 50 or above, because in a mature precious metal bull market, you do see 50 to 1 on the ratio. And with gold 3000, that can actually mean silver between 50 and 60. For those that think that because it's so that it's so industrialized these days, silver, in other words, that silver has so many industrial uses, and the purchasers of silver will not agree to pay 50 or 60 to put it into the thousands of industrial uses that it has. My response is that silver is used in very small amounts in consumer items or industrial items. Therefore, even if its price doubles, it won't affect probably the end price. It would almost be like this button the price of this button goes double. It probably would not change the price of the shirt. So that's how you should think about it. It's definitely possible that this will happen in the next few years. And just keep in mind that deglobalization, by definition, means that the reserve currency role is diminished. And by definition, when you put the national debt front and center in election cycles, and you start to talk about it as a problem, and as you know, to solve that problem, the easiest way is to inflate the debt. So it'll be the incentive of the U.S. government to continue to see a debase or a debasement in the dollar. I think that the cards are stacked towards higher precious metal prices. Regarding, you know, how high it should be, given the inflation, it's not the real question. Gold doesn't move with inflation; it moves with what's called real interest rates, and those are the arbitrage or the gap, the difference between the interest rates in the economy and inflation. In other words, if inflation is 18%, but interest rates are 20%, like Paul Volcker did, he created a bloodbath for gold. Gold plummeted from 850 all the way down to 250 two decades later. So what we care about is what's called real interest rates. And as I said, if inflation continues to run hot, but the Fed pauses, that gives you that environment of high inflation and just below that interest rates. And that's the perfect environment for gold, especially if the Fed has to cut because of slowdown, maybe in real estate, mm-hmm. Which is surely to come, or in regional banking, which, as you know, you don't solve the entire regional banking crisis by JP Morgan buying one bank. There are 4,000 regional banks in the United States. Who knows how their balance sheets look like, and how will they react if the Fed keeps rates as high as they are? So I think that we're not over the hurdle, not in real estate and not in regional banking. And those who study regional banks know that they are the one actually that create the mortgages for the commercial banks. So they have a double-edged sword where they both own bonds that have collapsed in value about 50%, and it's on their books. And they're the ones that have loaned money to office buildings and developers. So I think that that's not over at all. And if the Fed has to actually cut, not just pause, that's insane for gold and silver.
Well, listen to this, too. The owner of the largest hotel in San Francisco just walked away from the hotel, and they are allowing the hotel to fall back to the lender because of the onerous nature of San Francisco business at this point, because of low vacancy rates in businesses and office buildings, because of vagrancy and crime on the streets. So the city's in the United States are really starting to collapse from within because of the nature of the blue state behavior, right, that we talked about in this interview. By the way, guys, keep your eye on the COMEX. COMEX registered silver has fallen to 28 million ounces. I think the real story for silver and its price, the price it really should be at, is all reliant on the COMEX and the paper manipulation of the metals, which Gary Gensler, when he was the head of the CFTC, refused to do anything about. And I have to tell you, Lior, I really enjoyed your analysis today about deglobalization. I think you really hit the nail on the head. And to me, it's good news. I love my country, but I love the Republic of the United States. I do not love the DC corporate government, which acts increasingly despotic and authoritarian, and frankly, totalitarian. And it's really waking up people around the world and patriots in our nation as well. We've all had quite enough of the despots in DC.
I think you'll see more of that. Because the United States is moving, because the big companies in the United States are moving their factories outside of China, and are either bringing it to Mexico, Canada, or to the United States. And because of deglobalization, you will see resurgence of industry in the United States. You have to remember, the Mississippi River is the world's most amazing supply chain highway. There is nothing more efficient than the river system within the United States. It's the cheapest, the most effective way of freight anywhere in the world. And with a few changes in regulations, it can prosper in a way that is amazing. The potential of the United States is so incredible that it's endless. It's the own worst enemy, as we say. GDP can grow way faster. There's so much that can be done.
Well, and it's a little bit, and that's really our point here in this conversation, in my view, is that the despots in D.C., they have their foot on the neck of our nation, and we're all sick and tired of it. We know how the nation was prospering under Donald J. Trump and his policies. We know what could be the case, but we also know the despots in D.C., well, they're beholden to the New World Order, the United Nations, and UN Agenda 2030 policies, which is to gut our nation and to not allow us to use natural gas or coal or gasoline-powered cars. They want us to live like 17th century serfs, and we will continue to share that news and tell that story. Guys, our guest has been Lior Gantz. He's the founder of Wealth Research Group. I'll leave the link to those free CBDC reports below. Lior, I appreciate your time today. We went a little long, but I really do appreciate your analysis and your time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. And friends, thank you so much for tuning in. We very, very much appreciate it. And I want to give a special shout out to our members at Subscribestar. Thanks for keeping us in the fight for truth and real news and for real news every single day for free, guys. Visit us directly at thelibertymill.com, thephaser.com, and of course, sgtreport.com. Those are the antidotes to corporate propaganda and all of those mockingbird mainstream media lies. May God truly bless you and your family. Bye-bye.
I don't think that the powers that be, who knowingly, deliberately, intentionally unleashed a deadly and dangerous mRNA experimental shot on the people of America and the world, will ever admit that they knew what they were doing, because they knowingly planned it for more than 20 years. The data on that is unequivocal.